Welcome to our DC Diversity Dive, a podcast in which our diversity and inclusion team aim to recognise and support cultural practices and celebrations. By recognising and supporting these occasions, which are an important part of many people's lives and well-being, we help to enable an inclusive and diverse environment in which everyone can thrive regardless of their race, culture, or background. In today's episode, we look at Blue Monday. But what is Blue Monday? Blue Monday is often perceived as the day when absences from work are most common and was first coined by Sky Travel in a 2005 press release that claimed the company had collated the unfortunate dates using an equation. This equation factored in the weather, debt, motivation, failure of New Year's resolutions, time since Christmas, wage, and the feeling of the need to take action. However, there is no statistical evidence to prove this. Despite this, the idea of Blue Monday is a pertinent reminder of the glum feelings people can be experiencing during this time, with one in four of us suffering with a mental health issue in our lifetimes. In recent years, the conversation around mental health has really moved forward and is beginning to be prioritised alongside and equal to that of our physical health. Today, we look to discuss some of the more difficult topics and how to embody our value of becoming a change agent with our guest speakers, Lindsay Jones, our Chief People Officer, Sarah Carver, the Global Head of our Digital Business, and Frankie Herrett, our Chief Financial Officer. So what is the significance of Blue Monday and what does that mean to you?
I suppose it's a bit of a controversial topic because, you know, some people say it's a bit of a pseudoscience. It's, you know, made up by a travel company. And I'm a bit worried that it's a bit of a irresponsible tagline because it, first of all, it's like telling people they're going to be depressed on this day.
I thought the same.
Yeah.
I was like, be sad today.
Yeah, you're really sad today. This is the most depressing day of the year. There's even an equation to tell you why you're so sad. And then the other thing that, you know, I'm a bit concerned about is it also gives people this reason so that they don't necessarily do anything about it. Because, you know, there's a lot going on at this time of year. It is after Christmas. We do have short hours. Lots of people are getting sick, you know, all of these things that and everything that's happening in the world. And if we're just saying, oh, it's because of Blue Monday, it doesn't really encourage people to take action. You know, what are the positive steps I can do? Like, what, you know, why might I be feeling a bit down, a bit low energy? And therefore, what action can I take to improve that?
Yeah, and I agree, Lindsay, because a lot of it I think about is I generally find January and February challenging. Not one particular day, but more just I'm a very excitable, big Christmas person, all that build up, it's all great. I'm one of these people, I think it is sad, isn't it? The acronym for like when you're seasonal, I can't remember all of it now.
Affective disorder.
That's the one. So where I always feel
get,
when it's...
You can actually get a light for that now.
Yeah, more like maybe I need to invest in that. So I always find this time of year, generally, your mood is a bit lower. But I agree that almost by giving it a label, therefore thinks, oh, well, everyone, oh, it's, this is the way it is and this is how I should be. And that, okay, that's fine about it. Whereas actually thinking, no, okay, if I know I feel like this all the time around this time of year, what can I do differently to make it, you know, and it doesn't mean, because obviously the weather does impact a lot of things you may do, that generally being outside and fresh air helps with mental well-being and making you feel a bit brighter about life generally, but maybe at some activities that are indoor activities that can help with, you know, feeling a bit better about yourself and doing bits and pieces, and knowing that you may start to feel this way and thinking, right, how can I prevent that from happening, and thinking of new things that are good in January and February that you can do as a family or on your own that you can focus on, rather than all I'm doing is sitting looking out the window thinking the sun will come out at some point. So yeah, I think refocusing your energy to what am I going to do about it, rather than just, oh, this is how I feel all the time.
Yeah, and the timing is really important, because actually the most, you know, the time where we see the biggest impact of depression, so for example when the suicide rates are the highest, is in the spring. And that's because some of the depressive episodes start in January at the beginning of the year, and then they peak at spring. Suicide rates in men are at the highest on a Monday as well, so that's also this like attachment to Blue Monday. So it's really, this is an opportunity to know this could escalate, you know, this, if this is a bout of depression, and you know, you need to take action now before it gets, you know, I'm specifically talking about mental health, but I think it can encompass, you know, all things that might impact your mood and well-being at this time of year. Sarah, what do you notice in, you know, in the client world at this time of year? Because, you know, sometimes there's this feeling that we're kind of waiting to get started, you know, we're waiting for something to happen in January. And of course, our clients are going through the same things that we're going through. So what do you think about that?
I think it changed a little this year. I've certainly noticed with kind of changed business behaviour when people have been working from home. But I think, as you say, our clients are exactly the same as us. They're just people going through the exact same things, the post-Christmas, they're trying to get everything organised for January, circling back to all of the things that maybe people didn't quite get to in December and delayed until Jan, and then suddenly having to pick up and get back on top of. But as I say, I think some of the patterns have slightly changed over the last kind of couple of years, where actually people are a lot more on. I've certainly found it with my clients this Christmas. Everyone's a bit more on than they perhaps had been traditionally. People would have taken a bigger chunk off, whereas I think people are dipping in and out a bit more now that everyone's a bit more hybrid. So I think that's had, I suppose, positive impacts, but also negative ones in terms of the blurring of lines as well.
Yeah, that's really, really interesting. The whole, I think we were going to talk about that later on as well, but how, you know, hybrid working and working from home has impacted well-being for different groups in such different ways. You know, there's been loads of surveys, but I was looking at one from the Royal Society of Public Health, and 45% of people thought it was better for their well-being, but 29% of people thought it was worse. And it's, you know, it's really, if you look at the different groups or even the different genders, they have very different positives and negatives from this like hybrid way of working, you know, not being able to fully switch off, problems with their back and their neck depending where they're sitting, you know. So there's all sorts of things that are depending on the environment that you're able to work in, whether you're male or female, what generation you're in. So it's really great for some people, but it's actually really bad for others. So it's such a mix.
Yeah, I completely agree. I know for me personally, going back to that kind of Blue Monday piece, I've definitely found January far less painful this year because it's a slower, I mean, the train strikes has obviously impacted into that, because I normally would have gotten to the office in the first week, but it's not quite doable with the train strikes at the moment. But it's made my first week of Jan far more strategic and calmer, because rather than running around, getting straight back into going between offices, has actually been this first week of Jan has been getting on top of the post-Christmas stuff, but also being a little bit more strategic than perhaps you're able to sometimes when you're straight back into it and kind of straight back into the grind without stopping and thinking. So, but as you say, Lindsay, it's so personal, it's so situational with how you tick. For some people, getting back in that first week is really critical to their mental well-being because they need to be surrounded by their colleagues again. So I think it's how you get that right for different groups.
Yeah, I agree, Sarah, because I'm the same as you. I find when I go into the office and be in the office, it's there to talk to people, do the social side of it. It's catching up with different people I don't see all the time. And then you hear odd conversations and you get involved and all those sorts of things. Whereas actually having that first week at home quietly where people can't find you as easily, actually time to sit and reflect and go through and plan and get organised for the year ahead, I found quite helpful as well. So, but I think it's, like you say, it's different for different people. And depending, for me, I very much, in terms of how working from home's impacted how I do my day, I've often adopted this working from home, flexible working, because of my family situation. So it's something I've always tried to do and adopted and try to encourage when I've gone to different workplaces, because it works for me and my family. But that's like I say, that's a personal thing. But I think it's having that conversation. I always try and have that conversation with my team, because some members of my team like to be in the office every day. Other members would prefer not to come at all. And it's trying to get that balance, but accepting that and understanding that for individuals, and ensuring that, I suppose, as a manager as well, that I can be there for those that want to be in the office and be there and be with them, but equally accept that others want to be from home. And I know they're doing a great job. So, you know, there's no issue there at all. So I do think it's very difficult and challenging, maybe as a, I know we might talk about it later, about being a manager and how you manage that with different individuals. But I think we really need to understand our people and understand the people we work with, colleagues, as a manager, as a leader, and with our clients, to understand what works best for them and the company, and how we can sort of work together to ensure that everybody is fully feeling supported, I suppose. Because like you say, everyone has a different perception, and yeah. Even a leader doesn't mean because you like one way that the rest of your team will be the same.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, Frankie, what you're describing is true flexible working, because, you know, saying everyone works in the office 2 days a week or 3 days a week, that's not actually flexible working. No. You're still mandating when people need to be in. When I think about what do I need to do in the week, that there are certain types of days or certain types of activities that I have, some that will be better if I'm in the office and some that will be better when I'm at home. You know, like, do I need to come in and collaborate and meet with my team and, you know, innovate? And those things are definitely better done in person. But sometimes I'm on Teams all day long to people in all different parts of the world, and I will be in the office maybe and sitting in a room, and there's just no benefit of that. So I think it's being, you know, smart about what you need, what your team needs, and kind of communicating what type of day is this, and therefore where is it the most efficient for us to be. And that's what's truly flexible working, and I think that's what people really are wanting, that what's flexible for them.
I think it's also treating people as grown-ups, right? People know their own individual styles, and also, as you say, their days, what they have. Do they need a face-to-face day where they're collaborating? I think the thing we always have, bring the kind of business angle into it, is how do we manage that with our clients as well? As a consultancy, we reflect our client patterns, and some of those client patterns are incredibly varied. They could go from 5 days a week to once a fortnight. And so it's getting that balance of course, the individual needs, and ensuring that individual's supported, and we bake in their styles, their best ways of working, but also with the client needs. And that one tends to be a harder one to manage both sides.
And like I say, I think it's setting that expectation and being upfront and open and honest from the outset, isn't it? It's having those conversations with the client as well, to say, you know, do we recognize where we are in the world today? And having those conversations and being brave enough to have those conversations with our client, as well as with our colleagues as well, in terms of what's needed for the business, and have that careful balance. I think, you can't get it perfect all the time. I think best endeavors is always...
It's best endeavours, and I think it's seeing it in the round rather than on any individual day. You've got to plan for a chunk of the period rather than an individual day. One day may not look great, but the overall, that's the bit that I always try to get to with my teams, is the overall picture, both in line with your individual needs and the client needs. And I think as long as you can get to that, every so often that a day may not quite hit it, but as long as that overall structure is set up, and as you say, Frankie, you're spot on, everyone knows where they stand and everyone feels like they've been correctly communicated to, I think that's the most important thing.
So how can organizations or leaders support their teams or colleagues?
For me, it's a lot of what Frankie was saying earlier, is have the conversation and understand and listen to preferences. I think as human beings, we project a lot, or we make assumptions around what we perceive someone to perhaps want. So certainly when I do a lot of interviewing at DC, and I sometimes, when people ask that, what's your approach to flexible? I have to stop myself in curating my answer to what I think they might want to hear. And I just give the actual, the business answer as to what the reality is that we're client led, but we very much look at that holistic picture and the individual's needs. But I think you can perceive someone has children, therefore they might want this. And I think that's really important to not do, and to actually just ask the question and listen, and then work out a correct pattern. And also accept that it might not be one pattern forever, that things will flex and they'll adjust, and there may be peaks and troughs. And so working with that individual to get the right pattern, but most importantly, just no assumptions, no projection, just listen and collectively plan that together.
Yeah, I agree. You know, the way that we can be flexible to support what staff need and how they're working, I think we also need to think about what, you know, as leaders, what our staff are currently going through, you know, whether it's at this time of year or just in general with what's happening in the world. and, you know, how can we, you know, be more open? How can we create opportunities to have those sorts of conversations, like in a safe way, you know, where people can say they need help or they're struggling with something? That's kind of part of why having conversations like this, like in these sorts of podcasts, where maybe we can talk about things that we personally experience, or, you know, things that work for us, or things that can be challenging. So it's almost, you know, showing up to be vulnerable, and this happens to everybody, and by being more relatable, more accessible and more open, you know, we hope that employees will be able to speak to us, and, you know, we are open.
Yeah, I've always tried to take that approach as a manager. Like I said, I don't know if it works or not, but I've always taken the approach to show vulnerability and to talk about my own situation, because then hopefully they then feel comfortable that they can then share their own with me and explain why they may like to do the work in certain ways, how they may be feeling at certain times, particularly this time of year. I think most of the conversations I've had with my team so far is, oh, I hate January, you know, but sort of saying, oh, I feel like this, and just to try and get them talking about it and have that conversation. So then they may say, do you know what, actually I am, you know, I think just sort of putting yourself out there enables them to feel that they can have that conversation with you. I think that's very important.
Yeah, yeah. I'm completely the same. I completely wear my heart on my sleeve, so my team always know exactly where I'm at. But I also think it goes back to that hybrid piece. I think I'm super comfortable on Teams and Zoom. Not everyone is. And I think that's also really important to recognise. Sometimes people need that kind of walk around the block, around the office to really open up, as opposed to a kind of scheduled half an hour Teams chat. So I think, again, even getting that balance of in-person versus virtual is also super important on some of those more sensitive conversations.
Yeah, I think, you know, managers, leaders in general need to get better at this, you know, and I'm not blind to the fact that we're a group of female leaders here, and that we're perhaps, you know, more naturally inclined to have these conversations. And, you know, that's a generalization, but generalizations are based on real things. I think all managers need to be better at doing this, but particularly, you know, some of our male leaders need to be more open to the fact that, you know, showing some vulnerability, there's strength in showing vulnerability sometimes, and, you know, creating the positive impact of creating an open environment where people can tell you what they need, can ask for help. You know, how is that going to improve output, engagement? It's going to prevent absenteeism, you know, all of these things, which is essentially going to improve the performance of the business. So I think if we start realizing, and I'm sure we do in this group, but, you know, doing these things are not just the right way, the things that we should be doing, they're also the right business decisions. Behaving in this way, being open, supporting staff, is going to ensure that we're a successful business. And that's kind of really kind of core to why I do the job that I do, and why I find it energizing, is that I really believe that treating people well makes good business sense. And if we can continue to do that, we will have a successful business. And that would just be, you know, a great thing to think, is that we've always made people first decisions, we're always doing the best thing by our staff, and as a consequence we've got a super successful business with a brilliant culture. I think we've definitely got really good ingredients, and we're making that happen, but we can always be doing more.
I think maybe leaders as well, as leaders and as managers, or, you know, team managers, it's asking your colleagues, your peers, for help as well. So sometimes certain situations you may not feel comfortable with handling, or not sure how to handle and haven't experienced before, you can speak to each other and say, do you know what, I think this person could do with really talking to somebody. I'm not sure I'm the right person, I'm not sure how to handle it, could you speak to them please? You know there's no weakness in doing that, and sort of speaking to others and saying, actually I think that you might get more out of them than I will. Sometimes people don't want to talk to their direct manager because they don't, they're worried how you may then view them, and whilst that shouldn't matter, people do think that way. So sometimes speaking to somebody else can help. It's just being there and being available, I think, to everybody, and it doesn't need to be restricted to just your team.
Yeah, absolutely, I totally agree.
So just touching on that, could you share any tips on managing stress and enabling better well-being as well?
I've got a few views on this one, and I would certainly not claim to be the kind of expert on this, because I have my moments just like everyone else. I think probably the main ones I've learned is focus on what you can actually control. I would say earlier on in my career, I would spend a lot of effort and energy worrying about things that I couldn't actually influence or that I couldn't change that day. It's a real just waste of effort, because you're effectively worrying about the thing twice before it happens, and then you actually have to deal with the stress of when it actually happens. So instead, I'm a real believer in kind of taking action, and don't sit there worrying about something. Go and work out some measurable steps that you can actually do. And when you do the first one, it makes you feel a little bit better, and then you do the next. I always write a to-do list for my next day at the end of my day, to try and mentally shut down that day so that I don't wake up in the middle of the night worrying about random things. And then also learn your triggers when you note in yourself when you're feeling stressed. Mine, I can always tell because I start randomly cleaning things. And that's when I need to know, right, I need to employ all my coping mechanisms, whether it's just spending some time with my kids or going for a quick walk around the block. But really learn yourself. They are not the same triggers, and they're not the same coping mechanisms. It might be for someone else, it might be going to the gym. So really begin to learn about yourself. And it sounds obvious, but I think there's all these articles around your how to relieve stress. And I think, again, it's so personal, just like the hybrid conversation. You've got to spend time understanding you and how you tick.
Yeah, it's really hard to maintain those healthy habits when you're really busy. You know, they're always the things that you push down, you deprioritize. And I think as you maybe get to know yourself a bit more, or, you know, as these things happen over and over again, one needs to just get better at knowing that you know, these are like the non-negotiable things. Like, these habits allow me to function, they allow me to be efficient at my job. So even if I've got to put aside some time each day, which I don't feel like I have, that will create time for me in the long run. So prioritizing the healthy habits that you have at the times when you're super busy is the time where you need to do it the most. So when you've got the least time, that's really when these things become critical.
And as a Peloton instructor tells me, you don't have time, you make time.
Yeah.
So there is
that Hannah?
Yeah, love it.
Yeah, I love Hannah.
And they say, you know, but it is about that. It's like throughout the day, I will quite happily tell myself I don't have time to do all these wonderful things that will actually make me feel better and actually do my job better. I have to, I was actually, Lindsay, saying to Liv, saying you need to tell me when I haven't eaten. And she said you were saying exactly the same thing in the office. Sometimes you're like, you haven't eaten today. And you think, oh, I haven't got time to worry about that. But actually sitting down and eating your lunch for 10 minutes will make you more productive for the rest of the afternoon than the fact you've just carried on and not. So sometimes it's someone else telling you to, you need to take a break, or you need to have 5 minutes. But equally yourself knowing that the world will not end if you stop for 15 minutes to do something.
Bit I'd add there is making sure that the things you try to do are actually achievable habits. So as an example, I booked in for a yoga session this week, which I ended up cancelling. So I booked it in for my busiest day, which was a stupid thing to do. So I think if you're going to put these things in, make sure you're not. It's why most New Year's resolutions fail, right? Like, I'm going to get healthy and I'm going to run for an hour a day and I'm going to do this. And of course, they're so big and they're so bold, you end up doing nothing, feel disenchanted, and then achieve nothing. So it's making sure that you're putting in habits that are actually achievable habits, so you don't end up saying, wow, there's no point even trying because I can't do that. I think that's really important.
Yeah, and you feel like you've let yourself down as well when you don't. And then that sort of then compounds, doesn't it? Rather than actually setting something, you think, okay, day one, 10 minutes, done. Next day, let's see if we can do something a bit more now. Yeah.
What's that book, Atomic Habits? I don't know if you've read that one, but
no, you know, it's,
you just have to start doing the same thing every day. So even if you're doing it for 5 minutes, so it's all the science as to how.
I think it's 27 days, isn't it? It's a random amount of days where if you do something repeated for that number of days, it becomes a habit.
Yeah. But he gives an example of someone who is like, you know, morbidly obese, and they start off by just going to the gym every day. They don't do any exercise, they just go to the gym, and then that starts to become a habit, and then they, you know, then it's interesting. The other thing I just wanted to say, just for, you know, if anyone's listening, hopefully, that you know, there are lots of tools that are accessible to employees, you know, in different regions, whether it's, you know, healthcare packages or employee assistance programs, but there's tools that staff have got access to that they really should benefit from. Things like counselling through our EAP or through our health program, so that, you know, there are things, apps available that you can get through the healthcare, for example, that are there. And we probably need to get better at making people aware of the resources that they have. But, you know, there are things there. And again, you need to make time to access them. And probably as leaders, we need to set good examples of saying, right, you know, I'm actually not available for this hour because I'm talking to a therapist or whatever it might be. And just be open about that. You know, I need to put this time aside to go on the Peloton because that really enables me to have a good productive day. So whatever it is, like, just be open about it. Acceptable, it's encouraged, it's normal, it's healthy.
Speaking of some kind of tips that you could provide as well, what are the three top financial tips you would share with our listeners considering the current economic climate?
I should probably suggest some, but equally I'm terrible. So in terms of things I do myself to try and be better, I rely on my husband. He's much more sensible with money than I am. Three tips that I would suggest is, one, when starting a new year is always a good way to sort of start afresh. And sometimes the first thing I would say is actually take stock. So it's actually look at what you do spend your money on already, going through your direct debits, knowing what you get paid, going through your direct debits, knowing what comes out, knowing what you're spending, and almost do a bit of a check back. Sometimes I look at my statement and think, oh my God, I spent all of that on that. And bank accounts are really good these days. They do categorize what you're spending your money on. So I'd almost do a take stock and actually think, did that provide any benefit to my life? Was it worth it? Was it something I did on the off chance? Sometimes one of my coping things you shouldn't really admit to is shopping makes me feel better. And then you buy things and then you think, well, I've not worn that, so that was a complete waste of time. So sometimes it helps you sort of take stock of why you've made decisions on spending as well as what you're spending your money on. And then I'd say my second point is then to plan. So knowing what things you want to do this year, do you want to have a holiday? Do you want to move house? Do you want to buy a new car? Do you want to treat yourself to something specific? Do you want to go out for dinner for a birthday? So just knowing what those things are and ensuring that you can allow yourself sufficient funds to support those things as well as managing day to day. So I think, one, take a review of what you've been spending your money and then plan for how you want to spend your money in the coming year. And then my third thing is to always question yourself. So to manage my shopping problem, I don't buy things straight away. So I put stuff in a basket and then I leave it. And then I come back to it and 9 times out of 10, I think I don't need that. I don't want it. And then that's it. So sometimes it's just thinking about why you do spend your money. And it may be things like that. It may be you get your coffee from Starbucks every morning when you can perfectly get a good coffee if you go into the office. And it's, why am I buying that Starbucks? Is it because it does make me feel like it's a treat and I do it once a week and that's what I do for myself and that makes me feel good? Great. Or is it just a habit that I do every week that, to be honest, I'm not really that bothered about the coffee. It's not that great. And I'd rather just get one in the office. And it's making choices around what's really benefiting you, what's supporting you, and therefore, you know, using your money towards those things that make you feel better about yourself. That's what I would.
Yeah. Mindful spending. Yeah. You know, we practice mindfulness. We can do it with spending. There's one other thing that I would add to that, which I actually do quite regularly, is just shopping around. So I am one of those people who will like regularly change the supplier of, you know, whether it's our energy supplier or our internet, because it's quite significant the savings that you can make. And I think it's also the same if you're buying anything or, you know, you're doing your grocery shopping. You know, you can see which supermarkets have got deals on. And I get this like real, I feel like I've really been robbed if I haven't paid the right price on some things. It's like a real thing for me. And it's quite significant the savings you can make.
And there's vouchers. You can see vouchers in newspapers, yeah. And there's vouchers and things on all sorts of stuff. And even like you say, online shopping around, seeing deals, promotions, all those sorts of things. You see them all the time.
Yeah.
And then a couple of quick fire questions just to finish up this session. What is your top or favourite habit that you have to take care of your mental health?
I see a therapist. I have a coach. So I have a therapist for my mind and a coach for my business decisions. I try to journal. Before I had my son, I would religiously do it every day. And I definitely don't, but it's one of the practices, you know, I'm going to try and get better at. And I also, I exercise and I try and move and do yoga and stretch. That's me.
Mine. So my worst problem with when I'm stressed is sleep. So for me, so I do meditation every night when I go to bed, and that helps me. And I also write down, I have a book by the side of my bed. So if I think of things in the night, I can write them down. But equally, I write down 5 things that I am grateful for each day. And that's something that I started new last year, but I've kept going with it. And it does help me sort of think when I go to bed, which is the time when I suffer most, is I've done my meditation, I'm calm. And I've written down what's actually good about life and what's, you know, what I am grateful for and what's good in my life. And therefore, the things that I maybe have worried about during the day, they're not that important. So there are 2 things that I do particularly to help with sleep. And then the other one I do is exercise. I notice, so again, in December, I was swamped with work and it fell by the wayside, as it typically does around that time of year. It's too many dinners and drinks and work and all those things. And I notice when I'm not doing it, because then as soon as I start again, I feel 100 times better. So that's definitely one for me.
I wish my one was exercise. That's never been one. Apart from my yoga, clearly I miss my yoga. My one's probably my trigger when I know I need to spend some time with my kids, and I do more drop-offs and I leave my phone in the office. So I'm not kind of half doing emails while I'm spending time with them, but it's just literally kind of getting back. And I suppose it comes back to your gratitude journal of kind of just literally being properly present and spending some time with them. And it kind of, whatever's happening on the client or at work, you just realize we're not doctors, we're not saving lives. It's actually nothing is actually unsolvable or that important in the grand scheme of life. So that's a major one for me. I've already said cleaning. That's a good one.
I clean as well.
I think it just makes me feel I like order and structure. I have Excel spreadsheets to manage every part of my life. I like feeling organized. So when I'm feeling out of control in some way, that's a good one for me. And I've also done gratitude journals, and I also have a little bit by my bedside table, because one of my things is waking up in the middle of the night with something if I haven't done that. So I try to kind of empty my head of worries before I go to sleep. So that one works really well for me.
That's actually what my therapist has told me to do.
There you go. So.
There we go. We could have told you that. So we could send you some cash. That should have been your top tip, Frankie.
Brilliant. And lastly, what are the best and worst pieces of career advice that you have received?
So my best is basically just be yourself. So no matter what, you don't try and be anything other than yourself, and you'll get by just fine. And to be honest, that's where I've always been. Like I say, I always try to be authentic. I always show my vulnerability. Just be who I am. I don't try to be anything different every day. And then you'll get on with some people, you won't get on with others, but that's okay. And as long as you're true to yourself and you're not trying to be anyone you're not, then I think you can feel happy in yourself. So that's one that I have taken. Worst piece of advice, it's quite interesting, but I was trying to think of something that I've done. But one of the things was to, I got told a few years ago, was don't rock the boat. And in the moment, I sort of thought, oh, okay, because I was, you know, more junior, and I thought, oh, that clearly means I'm saying the wrong thing and, you know, I'm going to upset somebody. So, oh, okay. And for a little while, I didn't put my hand up or suggest something or give an opinion and things like that. And it was only as I sort of got older that I realized that was such bad advice. Mm-hmm. So it's basically telling you to not have an opinion, not have a voice, not express yourself in any way. And I thought that's not something you should be telling sort of a young person, to not feel like their opinion matters and not to show them that they're valued and respected. So in the moment I was told it, I didn't really think about it. I just sort of thought, oh, he's just telling me to shut up today. But actually, it did affect me for a little while afterwards. So yeah, so I am conscious of, even if something is said in jest, just be mindful of how that can be interpreted by somebody you're speaking to.
Mine is probably, in terms of best, just that you're in control of your day. I think lots of people say, oh, my diary is all over. It's like, that's your diary. So if it's getting out of hand, take back control of it. decline meetings, say no to things, and make sure that the what you're doing is achieving the goal that you set out to achieve or is in line with your objectives. I think quite a lot of people fall into a kind of victim mentality of being pulled around different places. And I think actually you are in control of your day, you're in control of your of how you respond to things. You can't control what other people around you do, but take kind of control of your work life and shape it. The worst I had, it's not actually dissimilar to Frankie's, it was in written feedback as well, to be less positive, which actually I think was actually just poorly written feedback, I think, and it's years and years and years ago now, probably well over a decade in fact, but I think what he was trying to say was adjust style. Sometimes people want to wallow and moan, whereas I'm a fixer. I like to say, right, what can we do about this? Let's try and do this, this and this, and put a plan in place. And so I think that's actually where the feedback was going, but at the time I was like, I need to be less happy, which as a glass half full person is quite a difficult thing to do actually.
Mine would be, I've definitely been given quite a lot of bad advice, and some of them I'm not sure if it's good or bad, but if I think about good advice, I think I've been told, you know, care about what you do, you know, try and do the right thing for the business, try and find a good sponsor, you know, all of these things I think are really, really helpful. I was thinking about all the like bad things that people have told me. So one thing that really sticks out is someone said to me, you're a woman, so you need to work harder, be better, you know, all of these things. And I just thought, looking back on it, we really should be saying, we should be trying to make the situation better rather than you need to outperform all of your colleagues because you're a woman. The other thing, and I'm not sure if I think this is a really good piece of advice or if it's really bad, is ask for forgiveness, not permission.
Oh, I love that one. That's definitely good advice. Well, I think that's good advice.
Yeah, so I'm not sure. Sometimes I think it's good and sometimes I'm not. So that definitely is one that sticks with me.
That's probably for me because that's one of my mantras.
A big thank you to Lindsay, Sarah and Frankie for taking the time to discuss these topics that are associated with Blue Monday and general mental health and well-being.
Thank you so much. It's been great speaking to everyone and looking forward to the next one.
Yes, no, thank you. I've really enjoyed it. Thank you for organising.
Yeah, it's been fun. It sounds like lots of similar points across all of us.
A few points in particular that stood out for me were ensuring that you are tailoring your advice and being human-led rather than policy-led, turning up as a leader and being vulnerable in your actions, and also being open to conversations and making time to be the best version of yourself. These conversations are absolutely vital to how we can prioritise our well-being as colleagues and managers whilst in the workplace and both in the office and at home. Thank you for listening to this discussion, and please look out for more content from Delta Capita on our website, deltacapita.com, our LinkedIn page, where you can find us under Delta Capita, and lastly, our Instagram, @delta.capita.